All right, we're going to start the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph. And this continues the Mishnah. It's in the series of Bechezka Shehu Kayam. This is a case where he's a Meniach Perot Liot Mafrish Aleim Truma Umasrot. He had a pile of fruits which he left aside in order to use as designated for Truma Umasrot for fruits that he had in other places. He was used those for Truma Umasrot. Or Maot, he had money, Liot Mafrish Aleim Aser Sheni. He had money that he set aside that he was going to use to be Podeh on it, Maser Sheni. So, just to point out here, in general, we don't, and we said this in the previous Gemara, that you can't be Mafrish, Truma and Maisos, Shalom and Amukov, if they're not, right, in the immediate area together. They're not, within close proximity to each other. So, Tosus points out over here, we're talking about a case where it's Ba'arve Shabbatos V'Yom Tovim. That it's Erev Shabbos, it's Yom Tov, where it's a difficult situation where he needs to get it done quickly or he needs to get on Shabbos quickly. So there we are, Matir, Shlomo and Amukov, in those extenuating circumstances. So now, Mash Prisha Leem Bechazkat Shein Kayamin. He can be Mafrish, he can use these payroll to this money with the underlying assumption that they still are extant at that time. So now, Im Avdu, if he discovers that they were lost, I mean that they're no longer there, Harizeh Choshesh Me'et Le'et, he has to worry for 24 hours, Divrei Rabbi Elazar. That's what Rabbi Elazar says. The Gemara is going to discuss what it means for 24 hours. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'shlosha prakim bokim et hayayin. In three time periods, we check the wine. Now, Rashi over here says, why are we checking the wine? We're checking the wine because you have to be mafrish truma from the wine. And the fear is that in over a period of time that the wine might somehow ferment and turn into vinegar. And you can't be mafrish vinegar, wine from vinegar, vinegar from wine. Either they're considered two different classes of of drink or food, and therefore you can't take chumas and maizos one from the other. So you have to check the yayin to ensure that it is still yayin. So when do you check? Bikidum shel motzei achag, immediately after motzei sukkot. Ubehotzat smadar, the time that the smadar comes. Ushat knisat mayim beboser, and the time that the water comes into the boser. Now, Hotzatz Madar is, as Rashi describes, is when the flower falls and the fruit begins to come out. Now, Knisat Mayim Baboser, Rashi brings two interpretations of what Knisat Mayim Baboser is. The first one is Kishehu Kupul Lavan, right, the size of a bean. And Kishalachluchit Nichneset, when the moisture, when the liquid starts to enter into the fruit, and that you could squeeze them, that if you actually squeezed them all right, you would actually get some liquid out of them. So that's what Rashi says, the first possibility of what Knisat Mayim Baboser is. And the second possibility he gives is that they used to crush the grapes when they are still very small, you know, when they're still in their state of being a boser. And then they used to add water with them in order to make vinegar. So this was a, instead of fermenting to make vinegar, this was a vinegar mikara, right, that they used to create from mikara. Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam over here says that he thinks that Rashi's, Rashi's first interpretation is correct, that it really means when the liquid is already gathered inside the grape, meaning so it's a partially ripened grape. And the Rabbeinu Tam comments here in the Tosfos, it's interesting, Rabbeinu Tam, he says, Yeshen nizharim bo, a maga. There's some people who don't worry about maga. What do you have to worry about touching? That's for yayin nesech, right? You have to worry about non-Jews touching the grapes. Because they think this is called water and not wine. I mean, they don't think this qualifies as wine. There's no reason to be mekel. We don't know where that cutoff point between wine and water is, and therefore you can't just assume that it's water and not wine. It's a very interesting, just a historical note. There was one year where the grapes, the wines didn't reach maturation. But you boser, and they were boser. There was either, you know, these young grapes or this vinegary type of liquid. And you're going to suggest that that year they didn't have yayin nesach? He says it's just not the case. Then in that year they also had to keep yayin nesach because it wasn't, we're not sure when it classifies as wine and when it classifies as water. And therefore we're choshesh that it should be wine. But nevertheless, the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam seem to support the first suggestion of Rashi, that it's once the fruit already has some sort of liquid in it, and then when you press it, it comes out to be a very sour or a vinegary quality. Now the Gemara asks, excuse me, my late. Now, when they find afterwards that the piles are missing and the money's gone, What does that mean that you have to worry about it for 24 hours? So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Me'el Eid Shel B'dika. What we think is we look 24 hours retroactively from the time you checked it. We assume when you checked it, it's not there. And for the period of 24 hours preceding the time you checked it, we also assume that it disappeared. It disappeared sometime in the last 24 hours of you checking. Elazar ben Antigonus Omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yanai Me'et Le'et Shel Hanacha. You only get, it's qualified for the first 24 hours after you put it there. I mean, so the last time that you knew for certain it was there, you get 24 hours after that. And from that point and beyond, it's considered to not be there. Where Choshesh, it's not there. So Tanan, our Mishnah says, Im Avdu, Harizeh Choshesh Me'et Le'et. That after loss, you worry about 24 hours. So Pishlam Alamant Amr Me'et Le'et Shel B'dika, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says, where we look 24 hours retroactively, we look back 24 hours and say that's the only period we worry about, that makes sense that we're choshesh mi'eit leit. We worry about 24 hours. Shapir. Elamando Amar, according to the one who says mi'eit leit shel hanacha, that you wait for 24 hours after the last time you've seen it, which means I could go back for days or months even. My mi'eit leit, why do we mean that you're choshesh mi'eit leit? It should say ad mi'eit leit. That we're choshesh until back to 24 hours. So the lack of the word ad suggests, right, that it's not his position, Miboyle. They should have said that, Kasha. That's a question on the position that I believe is made, according to Rav Elazar ben Antigonus, that it's 24 hours after the last time you knew it was there for certain. That's considered qualified, right? Our Mishnah does not sound like that. Our Mishnah sounds like Me'eit is looking from the time you found it not to be there. We look back 24 hours. So now, Amar Rav Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar over here is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, as Rashi points out. That's the of the Gemara, the Amora, right? Chalukin alav chayrav al Rabbi Elazar. So the chaverim or the Talmid Chachamim in the generation of Rabbi Elazar, they disagreed with him. Rabbi Elazar here is the Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah. That's the Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. The Tana, and we have a Mishnah. Mikveh shenimdad. They measured a mikveh of an imsa chaser. And they realize that it doesn't have 40 saw in it, right? 40 saw qualifies a mikveh to be a kosher mikveh, and it's missing a piece there. Kol tarot shenasu al gabav lemafreya. Anything that was tahor because it was placed in this mikveh, ben b'shut yachid, ben b'shut rabim. Whether the mikveh is in rishut yachid, rishut rabim, tmeot. All of them are considered tamei. Right, so now, over here, we understand why Birshuta Yachid it's Tameh, because Kol Safek Tumah Birshuta Yachid, we know that some Sota is Tameh. But we know in general, Safek Tumah Birshuta Rabim is Tahor. So why over here do we say it is Tameh, despite the fact that it's Birshuta Rabim? So Rashi points out, because the only time we say Safek Tumah Birshuta Rabim is Tahor, when I say Safek Mago, when the question is about whether it was touched or not touched. Then it was a question if it became Tameh, or it did not become Tameh. In our instance over here, it's clear that anything that you placed in the mikveh was Tameh. It was b'chazok, or it has a chezkas Tumah. You're trying to remove the Tumah over here. It's not a question, did it become Tameh? It was certainly Tameh. Now you're trying to remove that chezkas Tumah. Well, you can't remove that chezkas Tumah b'sofek. And that's what we have here. We have a mikveh that b'sofek was kosher, so therefore you can't remove that chezkas Tumah. Gemara says Peshitta. It's pretty clear from this mission that they argue in Rabbi Elazar, the Chalukin. Ma'udutim, what I would thought, Maila Mafreya, when the Mishnah in the Mikvos says that what? That Kol Tarash Nasua Gabav Limafreya retroactively are not Tahor, that we thought Mafreya was limited to Me'et Leit, 24 hours, just like Rav Elazar. Kamash Malon, that's not the case. That they believe the Mafreya means all the way back to the last time we knew it was certain to have 40 Sa'ah in it, is considered to be anything that was done or bin Mitaher in this Mikvah would be considered Tameh. As opposed to Rav Elazar and our Mishnah, who believes you only go back 24 hours from the discovery of the problem. So now, in our Mishnah, the last piece of the Mishnah discussed, and this is what the rest of the Gemara is going to be about, the Rav Yehuda says that there are three time periods when you have to check the wine. So the first period he talked about was Kidu Motzei Achag, immediately after Sukkot, meaning after Shmini Atzeret, the day after, right after Shmini Atzeret. So the Gemara qualifies it and says, Rav Yehuda Begimel Prakim, Tana, Bikidum Shel Motzei Achag Shel Tkufa. The only time it works, the only time that we have to check right after Sukkot, right after Shemini Atzeret, is when it's already the new Tkufa. I mean, right, it's the new season. The seasons would change, right? There's Tkufat Tishrei, and there's Tkufat Tammuz. Tkufat Tammuz is the summer. Tkufat Tishrei is already into the fall. So it already has to be the Tkufa of Tishrei. I mean, in order for you to be, right, have to check immediately after Sukkot, it must already be Tkufa Tishrei at that point in time. So now, you know, it's bothering me, and I see Tosos is also bothered by this, that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Tkufa Tishrei must enter, Tkufa Tishrei must start before the end of Sukkot. So it's impossible not to have Tkufa Tishrei start before, be there before the last day after Sukkot, because at least one day of Sukkot has to fall out during Tkufat Tishrei. The Tosus says over there that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that we're Ma'aber the Shana. That's what the discussion there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin is. When do we make a leap year? So the time to make a leap year, again, is to make Pesach fall out during Tkufat Nisan. And also, one of the times they talk about it is to make sure that Sukkot, at least one day of Sukkot, falls out during Tkufat Tishrei. So as it says, the Gemara there qualifies and says that we're only Ma'aber the Shana if that's not the only problem for Tkufat Tishrei. I mean, if there are other issues that would force you to make a leap year, then we would make a leap year. But if the only issue in the calendar was the fact that Sukkot would not fall out during Tkufat Tishrei, then they would not force to have a leap year. And then there would be this possibility that you could have Tkufat Tishrei actually start after Sukkot. Again, in our calendar, that's not possible, but Tosfos comes up with this Hechitim, so that it could be possible that this would not be the case, that Tkufat Tishrei would not start immediately after Sukkot. Now, Tanya, you have a brace. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Belgimel Prokim, Mochrim et Tvua. Right, so they're going to go through a series of periods of time, and then the Gemara is going to ask, what my nafkamino? Okay, why do we need to know this? So, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Belgimel Prokim, Mochrim et Tvua. There are three time periods in which you can sell grain. Right, you can sell Lifnei Azera, before it's planted. Ubishat is there at the time of planting. Ubiprusa Pesach, and the 15 days prior to Pesach. Now, question is, what's the difference between before you plant and when you plant? Those sound like the exact same time. So Tosfos says, well, Shat Azera means at the end of the planting season, and Lifnei Azera is before the planting season, so it gives a duration of time, meaning Shat Azera means once everything's done for the planting. Lifnei Azera is before they even start planting, so that gives you a little distance. Ubiprusa Pesach, and 15 days after Pesach. The three periods of time in which you can sell wine. Prusa Pesach, 15 days before Pesach. Prusa Tzeret, 15 days before Shavuot. Prusa Chag, 15 days before Sukkot. Vishemen, and you can sell oil, Me'atzeret Veilech, from Shavuot and onward. My ass, but my Hilchasa. Alright, fine. I mean, these are all nice things to tell us about what's the Nafkamina Lalocha. So, Amarava Vitemarapapa, the Shutfin. That has to do with Shutfin, partners. So what is the halacha for partners? So Rashi suggests that the halacha for partners here is that no one partner can go out and sell without the acquiescence of the other partner, meaning that the partners need permission from each other to go out and sell in the marketplace. But during these periods of time that are enumerated here, a single partner can go out and sell without the permission of the other partner, and the other partner cannot be ma'akev. I mean, he can't come back and say you should have sold it at the later time, even if the prices went up. Because these are considered to be the proper times to sell. I mean, these are considered the regular marketplace times to sell. These are the regular marketplace times to sell. A shutof cannot be ma'akev. That's what Rashi says. The Rabbeinu Tam and the Rach say no, that the shutfim here means that, in general, when you have a partnership, one partner can't force the other partner to dissolve the partnership. I mean, he can say to him, look, Sim, we're not dissolving it now. This is a bad time to dissolve it. We dissolve the partnership and try to sell it now. This is not a good time to sell the produce. We're going to get below market prices. So what they can say, but a partner can force the dissolution of the partnership once you reach these time periods. Since these time periods are considered the regular market times to sell, the other partner can't say, well, let's wait longer. He can say, no, we've hit the marketplace time. I can force you to dissolve the partnership. So those are Rashi and Tosfos about what it means. The Mai Hilchos says the Shutfos. So now the Gemara says, Mikan Veilech Mai, once you've crossed over these time periods, right, we get three time periods, what happens if you're after these time periods? What's the status? Amrava ko yoma pirkehu. After that point in time, everything becomes considered to be the regular market time to sell it. And once you're beyond that, there's no value in waiting longer. And therefore, for Shutfim, either the other one of them can force the dissolution of the partnership, or, according to Rashi, one of them can sell without permission of the other partner. All right, now the Gemara is going to go into Semagadato until the end of the parak about the winds. So it says in Yonah, Vahi Kizrach HaShemesh, right? Yonah left the city. He was sitting at the city. He was upset about what had happened with Tarshish. And then he's sitting under the Kikayon plant. And then it says, Hashem, Vayehi Kizrach HaShemesh. The sun was beating down. Vayiman Elukim Ruach Kadim Charishit. Right, Hashem brought, and I'll translate it here, although the Gemara is going to ask what the translate is, a strong easterly wind, right, which ends up drawing out the Kikayon, gets knocked out, and then he gets, we'll see in a second, that Yonah becomes overheated, Vayitaleif, and then he passes out, he faints. So my Charishit, what is this Charishit here? I translate it as strong. What is Charishit? Ruach Kadim Charishit. So I'm Rav Yehuda. So the first interpretation looks at Charishit from the word Choresh, to plow. Right? So that means what? In the oceans or in the waters, it makes Talmim Talmim. It means furrows, furrows. I mean, it makes waves in the waters. The wind is so strong that it makes waves in the water. So I'm like, Rabbo, if that's the case, that it's a strong wind, we're talking about the power of the wind, how are you going to explain the next half of the pasuk, which says, "Vatach Hashemesh al Rosh Yonah," that the sun beat down on the head of Yonah, "Vayitaleif," and then he passes out. It sounds like from this that the fact that the ruach kadim charishit, this wind was charishit, that caused Yonah, the sun, to beat down on Yonah and caused him to faint. According to you, if you have a strong wind blowing, right, that doesn't make someone faint. That actually would cool him off. It makes it windy. So why is that the case? Ela Amar Rabba. So Rabbi explains Charishit from the word, right? Cheresh, to silence, to one who cannot speak, right? Or here. Amar Rabba, Bishash Mnashevet, when the easterly wind blows, Mishateket Kol Aruchot Mipana. It silences all the other winds. And by silencing the other winds, that's what causes the heat to come in. Behainu Dichtiv, and this is what it's meaning. What does that mean? It knocks out the, when it comes in the heat, it breaks out the other winds that cause the coolness, and it makes the heat to come. Dechtiv. It says in Yov, Asher bigadecha chamim, right, the clothing is hot, bihashket eretz midarom. When the south, and here we're going to say the south wind has been silenced. And why was the south wind silenced? The south wind was silenced because the easterly wind was blowing, and that easterly wind causes the heat to come in. Amar Rav Tachlifa, Amar Rav Chista, Ematai Bigadecha Chamim, when are their clothes hot? B'shah Shehishkit Eretz Midarom, at the time that the southern wind has been silenced. Shebishah Shemneshevet, Mishateket Kol Ruachot Shemufanel, when it blows, when the easterly wind blows, it silences all the other winds, and the southern wind, which is known as the cooling wind, is then stopped, and when the cooling wind is stopped, it gets overheated, the heat builds up. And that's what explains why Yonah passed out, because the easterly wind came up and shut down all the other winds, which leaves him just in the baking and the heat. And that's what caused him to again, pass out. So, right, so that was what we explained. Either Cheresh is from plowing, or Cheresh is from, right, the deaf mute from a being silenced. So now Rav Huna, this is interesting. Rav Huna, Rav Chista, and Yatfe, they were sitting together. Cholif Azel Gneva Alayu. So the Mora Gneva passed by them. Let's stand up for him, right? Give him kavod. Let's stand up for him. The Baruyan, who is a big Talmud Chacham, let's stand up for him. So the other one said to him, we're going to get up for a guy who brings machlokes. So we actually had Gneva mentioned earlier in Ksuba. It says on Dav Zayin. If you remember on Dav Zayin, right, that he was causing problems for Mar Ukva. If you remember there, Mar Ukva, right, sent away. He was having so much trouble with Gneva that he sent today. He says, right, to the authorities. Very good. Very good. Exactly. So he sent away. Marukva asks the question, what am I allowed to do to Rav Elazar, right, about people, these people are causing me such pain and problems. What can I do for them? Well, to give them machut. In the end of the story there, it says that they took him away bekolar. And once they davened, the Rav Elazar said something, they took him away in chains, Gneva at the end of the time. So Gneva already here was causing huge problems for Ukva, and therefore either Rav Huna or Rav Chista, one of them felt it was inappropriate to stand up for him because he was so, right, he was such a bar machlokas, he was such a person of causing strife, they didn't feel appropriate to stand up for him. So Adochi Ata Yehuda Gabayu. So instead, he come over to them, meaning that they didn't get up. So he came over to them, the Marsha says, because he saw that they didn't stand up for him, so he thought they were engrossed in their girsa, and therefore he approached them to see what they were learning. Amalu, but my asiktu, what are you learning about? Amrulei bruchot, we're discussing the winds. So Amalu, achi amai, Rav Chanan barava amarav, dalad ruchot min ashavot v'chol yom. That every day, the four winds blow. V'ruach tzfonit min ashavit im kulan. And the northern wind joins all of them, and quote-unquote sweetens them, the other winds. Shimalei kein in olam mitkayim. Afilu sha'achat. That without the northern wind to make more mild the other winds, the world would not be sustained. The ruach dromit and the southern wind kashem kulan is the worst of them. V'amalei benetz mamida, and it had not been for the malach benetz, have he held it up? Mecharevet kol olam kulo mipana, that it would destroy the whole world. So how do we know this? Shneamar, it says in Iov, Ha'mi binyatcha ye'aver netz ifros kinafav le'teman. So literally it means, you know, Hashem, with your wisdom, you call the netz, the hawk or the eagle, to grow its either its pinions or its wings. Ifros kinafav, it'll spread its wings to the south. But the Gemara here is interpreting netz to be netz des malach, that he spreads his wings to the south to slow that southern wind from blowing. So now we have a story about the Amoraim about this. Rav of Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Avayatve. They were sitting, Rav Cholif, Azil Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. So Rav Nachman bar Yaakov was passing by them, but he was sitting, the Yati Begurka de Dava. He was sitting in a golden chariot, Uparisele Sarvala de Karte, and he had cheles and curtains and velvet that were spread out over the chariot. I mean, it was somebody of nobility that was passing by. Rav Azal de Gabe, Rav got up and went to see him. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak lo azal gabe. Rav Nachman Yitzchak did not go to see him. Amar, Rav Nachman Yitzchak was not willing to go to him, says, Dilma mi inshe de be resh galutin inhu. Maybe they're from the house of the resh galuta. And we've seen before that maybe they were not either they weren't necessarily the friendliest or the nicest, the people from the be resh galuta. And they weren't necessarily tamid chamim. So he didn't feel compelled to go up and to go see them. Rava tzarech lehu. Rava needed them, meaning that he needed to be in good favor with the Resh Galuta, therefore he went to greet them. I don't need a favor from them, I don't need to be in their good stead. So Rashi says over here, the reason that he did not need to be in his good stead was because, based on the Gemara in Chulin, that Rav Nachman was Chatnei de Nasi Ahava, that he was the son-in-law of the Nasi. So therefore he was already set, he was in the family. So he didn't have to get up for these other people of the Resh Galuta. Now that's assuming, Gemara Chulin says that it's Rav Nachman. Does not say it's Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, but Rav Nachman. So based on this, Rashi says it, and he says also Megillah, that Stam Rav Nachman in Shas is Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. So therefore, when it says Rav Nachman in Chulin, it means Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, and that's how we know he was already a relative, he was already family to the Nesiah, to the Resh Galuta. Tosfos rejects this here and says it's not the case. We find a couple places he brings proof, where the Gemara brings down both Rav Nachman and Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak in the same Memra, which suggests that Stam Rav Nachman in Shas is not Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. So rather, Tosfos over here suggests that the Stam Rav Nachman in Shas is Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, and that the case in Chulin, when it says Rav Nachman, that was Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, that he was the son-in-law of the Nasi, he was part of the family of Resh Galuta. And that's why here, in our case here, who's riding in the golden chariot with all the, the golden, the velvet and tchelet curtains on it? That's Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, because he's part of the family of the Resh Galuta. So then, how do you explain here that Rav Nachman Yitzchak didn't need them? According to Rashi, we know what Rav Nachman said Yitzchak because he was part of the family. But now, if you hold like Tosfos, that Stam Rav Nachman throughout Shas is Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, because, as Tosfos points out, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov is never mentioned with Stam Rav Nachman and throughout Shas. So he says, then why didn't Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak need the Resh Galuta? Why didn't he have to go and greet them? So he says that Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak was wealthy, and therefore he didn't need any favors from them. He was, a self-made man, and therefore he didn't need anything from the Resh Galuta. Thank you. So you're saying that the Aruch says that it's Rav Achar bar Yaakov. That was the person riding in the chariot over here. Okay. So could the Chaza... So when Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak saw that who was in the chariot, it was Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, Hava Azul Gabe. So he went over to see him, because he really was a Talmud Chacham, and it wasn't just people from the Resh Galuta's house. So Golil Adare, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov rolled up his sleeve, or opened his arms, because he was so hot. Amar Shadya Noshiv. The Shadya is blowing. So what does that mean? The shade. That the shade is blowing. What does it mean that the shade is blowing? That means that the southern wind, the over here, the easterly wind was blowing, which was causing the heat to come. Zamarova, Hochamarav, Ishama Pelitzbo, that this easterly wind is so hot and so bad that women miscarrying it. Ushmolamara Filu Margalib Shiyam Mirakevit. That even the pearls of the sea, they rot in this wind. Right, even the semen in a woman's womb, misarechet, rats, bo. Samar of Nachman by Yitzchak, ushloshtam mikra echad darshu. They all learn it out from the same pasuk in Hosea. It says, kihu ben achim yafri. So this means that the reeds will flourish, right, among them. Yavo kadim ruach Hashem in midbar. The easterly wind will come from the desert. Oleh comes up, ve'yevosh mikoro, and dries out the foundations or the core. So yevosh mikoro, ze mikorash elisha. Right, that is the foundation or the source or the fountain of the woman, which is her womb. Right, meaning that's what it means, mapelet isha. Then the pasuk continues, ve'yecherav mayano, and it will destroy the springs. That is what the shechvat zerash meisha. Who yishseh otsar kokli chemdai? It will tear apart the storehouses of anything precious. So what's that mean? That's zum margalit beyam. That's the precious stones from the sea. So amarova ede surahu the daikikra. That these people, the people of Surah, were very particular about making sure that a pasuk was darshaned completely in a single context. So far we darshaned the whole second half of the pasuk to do with winds. But what we didn't deal with was the first part of the pasuk, which is kihu ben achim yafri, that the reeds will flourish right amongst them. So now, how do they explain that? My kihu ben achim yafri. So how do you explain that? So amarava afilu shufta bekubina, right? Even the handle, right? This is the rod or the handle of a kupina, right? That goes into the hoe or into the rake, right? Rafio becomes loose. So normally when it's placed in there tight. Benachim means between the two metal pieces. When you place the handle into them, it stays tight. But because the wind dries it out so badly, it loosens over there. Yosef Amar, afilu sichta bedafno. Even the nail or the peg that's in the wall becomes loose from this heat. It dries out so badly that it can be pulled out, it becomes loose. V'achar b'Yakov Amar, afilu kanya b'kufta rafyo. Even the reeds that are in a basket, they become loosened over here. So they're all playing on this benachim, on the right, this idea that yafri will be loosened or flourish. So over here, benachim, either reeds that are in the basket, right, or we explain either the benachim means something that's held tightly or pressed tightly, so that's either the handle into the rake or the peg into the wall, they will loosen from this wind that blows, this easterly wind that blows, and causes them to be loosened, to dry out and to loosen. So therefore they darshan the entire pasuk in context of the wind. All right, so we'll stop here at the end of the parak.